Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range. That was the Cactus Blossoms kicking things off for us tonight with the lead-off track to their album Easy Way. That's Desperado. And boy, does that really make me think of the Mavericks, who, it should be mentioned, are coming this fall. But the Cactus Blossoms are in town and playing the Winnipeg Folk Festival tomorrow. 12:45 at Snowberry is their kind of concert show. They will be doing some workshops as well. But strongly encourage you to check out the interview I did as part of Festival Express with the brothers. And that's Paige Burkham and Jack Torrey. And strongly encourage you to check them out at Birds Hill if you're out there tomorrow. I'm going to play you a little something else from another Folk Fest favorite of mine, and that is Combo Chimpita, who played this afternoon at Green Ash and will be playing Malleable Syncopations a workshop tomorrow afternoon. And then we've got my interview with Mariel Buckley, who is going to be playing Spruce Hollow tomorrow morning, 11:15 a.m. This aired as part of the Festival Express series as well, but I wanted to give one last push for people to check out Mariel's stuff. And then coming up later in the show, we're going to be talking to Brigitte Neger of Common Holly, who will be playing Real Love Summerfest at the end of this month. But before we get to that, this is Kombu Chimbita with the title track to their latest album, Ahamale. All right, well, coming to Birds Hill Park this weekend, Mariel Buckley, making the drive from Calgary, Alberta. She joins us by phone. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm excited good. For this weekend. The weather forecast, fingers crossed. I mean, I'm always a little trepidatious about forecasts, but it looks pretty good. So
that's great. Yeah, I'm excited.
Now, you've played festivals in Manitoba before, because I know that you played Country Fest last year. What's your experience with folk festivals, though?
Well, we've played quite a few of the ones out, you know, kind of far west. We did Vancouver and Calgary, and we've done Edmonton and Canmore and South and North Country Fair. So, I mean, I love folk festivals. I'm sure that Winnipeg Folk will be significantly different than Dauphin Country Fest.
I feel like a little bit, but I mean, you know, the scope and things like that sometimes change things.
Totally.
You know, your music kind of seems to exist in, I don't want to say an ambiguous place, but like kind of you kind of tread between country and folk and roots and some blues and stuff like that. Like, do you think of yourself as like a specific genre, or like, do you think that you can play something like a country fest and a folk fest, you know, in back-to-back years, just because the music really doesn't have like a specific sound?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I've been using the word Americana just because it sort of is a good umbrella term for all of those like traditional trends that I sort of abide by. But yeah, I don't really think too much on it, although I know that some people, you know, hear the country elements and really grab onto that, and some people kind of hear more of a folk or a roots thing, and whatever it is, I mean, I'm just glad that people are liking it, I guess.
Yeah, Americana does have kind of like a nice kind of overarching umbrella for a lot of different sounds.
Totally.
Go ahead.
No, that's good.
You know, when you start writing a song, do you have an idea of kind of like what style or sound it's going to have? Like, do you think about that?
Not really. Like, when I write songs, I'm generally not thinking about production at all. So I generally kind of try to, my theory is that if I write a song that's really good, if it's just me playing it by myself, then it'll hold up to whatever production we put on it. So it's important to me that the song, you know, it could have any vibe, really, depending on what instrumentation we decide to put on it. But generally when I'm writing, I don't really think in terms of anything except, like, you know, the strongest melody and the strongest lyrics, and just trying to keep it concise and well-delivered for the listener.
So then the core of a song for you when you're writing it is melody and lyric?
Yeah, I think so.
So are you writing from like kind of an emotional place, like a storytelling place? Like, what's, you know, the kind of your modus operandi when it comes to writing a song then?
It's kind of a combo of all of that stuff. I mean, like, I do try to keep it pretty personal, because I feel like you can hear and feel that vulnerability in a song when you know it's coming from somewhere real, and people latch onto that because they relate their own experiences to it or whatever it is. But you know, a lot of the times it's things I've observed directly that I'm telling as a storyteller, or you know, mixed in with my own personal sort of experiences. Or it is, you know, a lot of my music's just very personal. It's just very true to life. So.
So are you said observational, like, are you kind of the type of person who at maybe like a party or a gathering is kind of in the corner watching people? Is that kind of like the observational thing, or is it more just kind of like as you're experiencing something, you kind of take note of it?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, I am very comfortable kind of being on the periphery and taking note of things, but I also, yeah, I do pay a lot of attention to, you know, people and our interactions and kind of what's going on around me. So it's probably a combo of all that stuff.
Have there been any times where, like, you've realized in the moment this is a song, or this is the kernel of like a story within a song in a situation where you hadn't necessarily expected that?
Yeah, for sure. It happens a lot when we go on tour. I was saying to my band the other day that, like, when we go to especially really small rural, like, prairie towns, there's so many like characters in these tiny towns, because I think, you know, there's so few things to hide behind when there's only like 300 people that live where you are. So I've caught myself a lot lately just sort of unexpectedly being like, wow, like, that guy's so interesting. Like, I'll write a song about that for sure, or whatever it is.
So when you say there's like nowhere to hide behind it in these small towns, like, are you meaning it's just because there's like so few people that you can't get lost in a crowd if you're kind of like peculiar, or?
Totally, yeah. Like if you're, you know, if you stand out or you're different, which is, you know, something that I really notice about people because I often, you know, sort of feel the same way. It's like in a small environment, everybody kind of knows your business, and it's a bit like the microscope effect. You're just kind of, you know, in front of everybody, whether you want to be or not.
Right. So you obviously chose to be in front of everybody by becoming a singer and, and performer. When did you make that choice? Like, was it something like early on that you kind of had that impulse, or like did you kind of come to it later on?
Well, I don't know. I think like my brother's a songwriter as well, a singer-songwriter who's really influenced a lot of my decisions in life because he's quite a bit older than I am, and I just sort of wanted to be just like him for so long. But I don't know when I made the conscious switch from like just sort of playing open mics to like wanting to do this all the time. I think it was when I just started writing more and making an active effort to engage that part of my brain. And and then the last 4 years I've just been taking it pretty seriously. So it was just sort of a natural transition, I think.
What's the age gap between you and your brother?
7 years.
7 years. So is it kind of a circumstance where like you kind of checked out his record collection, or like he kind of pointed you in the way as far as singer-songwriters, or what was your pathway?
I mean, we were like really close as kids, and so I would like go into his room and steal all his like Tragically Hip CDs, and he would take me for a ride in his like, you know, shitty old car, and we'd play the tapes that he had on the seat. And you know, and then when we got older and he got into like Neil Young and all the great songwriters that we both really admire, it was a really easy transition for me to just sort of follow along and learn as he was learning.
So did you get a sense of like songwriting from him? Like did you kind of see how he sussed out songs and then like develop your own style as a result of that? Or like what kind of...
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think definitely I even started sort of mimicking and imitating him because, you know, he writes a lot about the Canadian prairie landscape. And to me it was like, oh yeah, that's what we grew up around. But the more that I started to do it, the more I sort of realized like we are similar people, but we've had totally different experiences growing up and who we are as people. So my sort of voice and vision just sort of sculpted slowly over time, and I began to find kind of my own thing.
In terms of finding your own thing, what is that process like? Is it, you know, trying out other people's voices or like kind of mimicking their style and then developing your own? Or like what's kind of like, do you have to kind of like set yourself aside and not listen to anyone else for a while and try to see what you come up with?
I think in the beginning it was, you know, I mean, and maybe this is just me, but you know, you start out by covering songs that you like when you're learning how to sing and write songs and stuff. So for me, it was like, I would imitate the people that I looked up to, all the songwriters that I liked, to learn all their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would imitate them in a small way, but now kind of the older I get and the more that I feel more confident as a songwriter, I try really hard not to take outside influence, like you said. Like there's a lot of times when I'm trying to write where I just don't listen to singer-songwriters at all. Like I'm just reading or I'm not listening to music to try not to get swayed one way or the other.
Do you find that you could be like kind of pulled by someone's sound if they're doing something that you gravitate to or kind of like?
Yeah, I think if there's like, if there's a natural inclination already there, and you know, it's sort of funny because within the country genre, there's just been such like big noticeable rootsy changes that I've sort of, you know, paid attention to those trends. And yeah, I think you move with the times as well. So it's still easy to be influenced by other stuff, but, I do try really hard to have my own sound. Although, you know, we all know that it's nearly impossible not to pick up your influences and throw them off a little bit.
Right. Now, I mean, you mentioned Neil Young, you mentioned the Tragically Hip, obviously there's like roots rock in Canada. Were there any like Canadian country artists that pointed a path for you at all, or like that you listened to when you were younger?
You know, I'm trying to think, and actually like I didn't grow up listening to a whole lot of country. I got into country in my early 20s, really heavy, and even then it was a lot of American country. I mean, obviously like Wolf Carter, and I liked some Hank Snow stuff. Being a child of the 90s, I was really into like Jimmy Rankin for a little bit there, and but I can't think of anybody like off the top of my head, because I just wasn't really into country that much.
Sure. I was just curious in terms of, especially growing up in Calgary, which is, you know, considered a cow town. And I mean, I know there's like a good punk scene in Calgary, but I wasn't sure about kind of what kind of growing up in a country city would do to you.
Well, and I mean, you know, I was lucky too when I was starting out. There's so many good country songwriters that are just local Calgarians. Like Tom Phillips is a guy that I used to go see and still go see all the time because he's like the best songwriter anywhere, in my opinion.
What makes a good songwriter to you?
It's lots of things, I think. It's kind of a combo of somebody who, like, somebody who's not afraid to, like, to tell their truth, but somebody who also, it's really tough. I mean, it's got to grab you in the right way, and I think that can only happen when somebody's looked at themselves in a really honest and kind of stark way. Like, I think the best songwriters have had some tough times in their life and have been able to, like, turn inward and say, like, why was that? And then they kind of can share that with the world. Or somebody who's conversely, like, a really great observer of human nature.
Right. Now, you worked with Leroy Stagger on your most recent record, Driving in the Dark, and that's someone who I'd consider a pretty great Canadian singer-songwriter.
Incredible,
How did you land with Leroy, and what was that working relationship like?
Well, he judged a 12-minute little touring alliance panel that I was part of. So I played like three songs and he was on this judging panel and he, you know, we became friends and he took me on some of my first tour dates like 3 or 4 years ago, opening for him in Alberta. And then after that, it was just like a very natural, you know, I sort of said, I'm really listening to a lot of this and I want to make a record like this. And he said, I mean, yeah, that's what I want to do. And it was just really natural and easy. And he's just been so supportive of me, which has been really nice.
Now, producer credit can be, you know, engineering. It can be, you know, almost like an editor for a writer. What was that relationship like?
I would say that, like, I'm a pretty good editor of my own stuff. So I usually go in with stuff mostly arranged. That being said, like, we definitely made a couple trims and cuts in the studio. But Leroy, we had an engineer, and Leroy was just really great at kind of directing the band. So I don't, like I said, I don't usually have any idea kind of what I want people to play. But I know it when I hear it, whereas he can kind of be like, you should do this and you should do this, and can kind of hear the vision before it's really been realized.
Right. Now, that record came out last spring, and yeah. I guess last month you released a new song called Casting Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, do you have like more stuff in the works? Like, do you have a new record kind of in the offing, or where are things at with you like that?
No, I'm kind of working on some solo stuff right now, actually. I'm just doing like a little collection, little EP of some new songs that I'm working on, just in the very rough demo stages that I'm going to release. But it won't be, it'll be a couple years or a year before another full-length record. I want to make sure I take the time to get it right. And, you know, I'm writing a lot right now, and I want to go in with a lot of material to choose from, I think. So
Casting Stones, you described on Tinnitus as a protest song.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, did you set out to write a protest song, or did you just kind of write something and realize it was a protest song once you kind of really looked at it?
No, I didn't really, like, I think I was just pissed off about something that was about a lot of things probably, but I kind of actually wrote it just for me. It was sort of not, I don't really think I ever intended to release it or anything, but I played it live at a show when I wrote it, and then I was like, people really connected with it, and I thought, well, maybe I'll bring this to the Driving in the Dark recording. And we recorded it at the same time as the record. And then it didn't really fit with the rest of the album. So we left it and then kind of went back to it recently. And I was like, yeah, this is pretty like, it's relevant. And I like the jam. So we decided to put it out.
You mentioned you played it live. Like, is that something you do? Do you like road test songs if you're kind of unsure or just kind of in its infancy?
That's what I have done in the past. Yeah, I generally want to make sure that, like, it feels comfortable, the transitions feel good, that it's, like, catchy maybe, or I'm not really sure, but I'm trying to do that less and less now and have it be more of, like, an unveiling, like a, you know, when the record comes out, then you play them, but we'll see. I mean, I do really enjoy testing them live. I think it's a great way to find out if something's going to stick.
Now, you mentioned, you know, some stories come from the road. Do you write on the road? Like, are you someone who, like, because I know in talking to some artists, they just, the, you know, the driving and the performing and just like the hours just sap them of the energy that they need to create. But I know some, you know, either carve out time or just find themselves inspired by certain things on the road and write songs on the road.
I try to do that. It's tough to find time, but there are like really weird moments in the day, or mostly at night, you know, after you've loaded up and left the venue and it's like 1 a.m. and you're so tired and you really should just go to bed because you have to drive all day the next day. But you're kind of just like struck by something. Maybe it's just that you're alone and it just feels really, really bare out there when you're, you know, even if you're with your band, it's like you're all kind of taking this risk. And it's a really great place to write from, I think, because you're sort of exposed and very vulnerable when you're on tour.
So that vulnerability is kind of what makes for a good kind of like pot in which to stew a song like that?
For me, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. You're playing at the Folk Festival, then immediately after, though, you're going out on a short tour with Sarah Shook and the Disarmers. And Sarah Shook also playing Winnipeg Folk Festival. And she listed your record, Driving in the Dark, as one of her favorites of 2018. What's like, is that kind of how you landed on the tour with Sarah, or what kind of came about?
No, like, we met at Calgary Folk Fest last year. We got put in a workshop together.
Okay.
And it was like just a really instant and natural friendship. Like, I'd been following her a bit beforehand because I know she's kind of on a pretty quick and steady climb upward. And then we did that workshop together, and it was just like, you know, it doesn't happen very often, but you just like, you meet somebody that's like, oh yeah, we just totally hit it off right away and became buds. And then she was, you know, she's been really generous to me, being a Canadian artist and wanting to break into that market. She's just been like so great at sharing my stuff with her fan base. And then she was like, you know, we should just do some shows together. And it just happened the way that you kind of always hope it does.
That's great. Yeah. Those workshops, like, as an artist, do you like those opportunities that workshops provide for kind of that spontaneity? Or is that kind of, because I know some people find it daunting to like not just do a set.
Oh, well, I like it. I mean, I'm not like by any means a jammer or like a great collaborator musically, but I just love to be up there with people and kind of hear their perspective and get to share a stage, because like, regardless of how much you jump in on each other's stuff, there's always like cool moments that happen.
And I guess kind of the opportunity to like hear another artist talk about their process a little in between songs is maybe a good
thing. Totally. It's really like, yeah, it's really putting you all on the same level and page, and everybody just kind of like shares their tunes. And I always think that's great, because it's just, you know, another chance to explore the craft of songwriting, right?
Absolutely. So after the swing with Sarah Shook, what's on the short-term agenda for Muriel?
We drive from Washington to Ness Creek in Saskatchewan. We do a festival, and then we go to Wild Mountain Music Festival. And then we have about a week off, and then we drive east, so we go, Milwaukee, Toronto, Hamilton, Montreal, Ottawa, New York, and then we're kind of capping off the summer with the Philadelphia Folk Fest at the end of August there.
So summer festival season and logging lots of miles on the road, probably doing some driving in the dark. Muriel, before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off of the record, or I mean, it could obviously be the new single if you want, that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about it, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah, sure. You know what? Why don't we do the last track? It's called I Wonder. I wrote it with Leroy, and it's my favorite tune to play live. And I think it's a catchy and a great, I love the way that we ended up producing it. It's got some great harmonies on it, and it's just like a fun, tune, and it's perfect radio length. It's like 3 minutes long. So,
what makes it your favorite song to play live?
I don't know. It's something like the drum beat is something I would have like imagined myself playing to. Like, it's almost kind of 60s pop feeling.
Okay.
But it's we always usually end the set with it, and it's just like a great peppy little send off to the set, and always leaves us feeling really energized, and the crowd seems to dig it. So.
Is that why it's last on the record as well, like kind of that send-off?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will give that one a listen. Muriel, thanks for taking some time. Looking forward to seeing you out at Birds Hill Park, and safe drives in the interim.
Oh, thanks a lot for talking to me, Michael. I appreciate it.
I'm a fool to want you like I so fast. To you it don't much matter if I stay or if I leave, but I'm a fool to wait around to see. Tell it to me straight as the wind. Then you call I can feel my heart is sinking. comic title, but I'm a fool. I'll take my chance. The smart one would say, let's see. We'll be right back.
We're back here on Thank God It's Free Range, and we just heard Winkler Act, An Unexpected End, with Johnny from their self-titled EP, which they just sent us earlier this week. Really exciting stuff, and kind of need to hear something from Winkler. We've got a new track from Louise Burns called Just Walk Away that she has released in advance of a forthcoming album called Portraits. And then coming up after that, my interview with Common Holly, or rather Brigitte from Common Holly, who is playing Real Love Summerfest at the end of July in Toulon. Stick around here on 101.5 UMFM. All right. Well, coming to the Real Love Summerfest and also calling it her Back from the Dead tour, Brigitte Nagar, performing under the name Common Holly, joins me on the phone. How are you doing, Brigitte?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing very well. Now, why are you calling it Back from the Dead tour?
Yeah, great question. I think it's probably because I've been kind of laying low for the last maybe year or so, just kind of like getting a new record together and really feeling this like huge burning desire to get back on the road. So yes, I'm really thrilled to be doing that. And it does feel like a bit of a back of the dead kind of situation, back from the dead. Yeah.
So obviously you released Playing House last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously like did touring around it. Was it then kind of like where you kind of sequestered yourself or kind of like went away for a while to work on a new record, or like, was there an intentionality to it?
I guess there was definitely an intentionality. I mean, I went initially to record at my family cabin, and so that was obviously a sequestered situation. And then it was just many, many months of work. I think we probably ended up working 9 or 10 months all told. And then I guess following that, maybe it became a little less intentional because, you know, once you have an album, it's not like you can just throw it out into the world, I guess. So there was a lot of sitting on it and waiting and, you know, trying to figure out what to do with it. So that was kind of the last few months, I'd say.
When you say trying to figure out what to do with it, what kind of decision making is involved in that?
A big part of it is, I guess, finding the right team to help put it out. So labels and, you know, PR people, and even just, you know, assembling the right band for it, I think was a big part of it as well, so that I'd be able to kind of like represent it the way that I want to with the right people and so on. So that, you know, all of those things together take quite a while.
So is it a situation where you kind of like recorded all the material yourself and then need to find a band to kind of flesh it out live or like kind of replicate what you did?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, well, so I write all the music and then I record it with my very good friend and producer Devin Bate. And then we actually ended up working on it for a couple of months with someone called Hamish Mitchell, who edited it and mixed it and ran it through tape machines, and kind of all together, I think that made it what it was. And then, yeah, following that, basically everything is arranged, and then it's time to assemble the band, exactly.
Running it through tape machines, was that to like achieve a specific sound you were looking for? Or, like, what was that about?
Yeah, I think part of the process of the album was definitely trying to figure out what Common Holly sounds like or should sound like. And so I think like in this particular period, we were trying to find the balance between something that felt clear and high quality and also something that felt kind of warm and maybe a little underground and kind of weird. So I think that all the people involved really helped to kind of like shape a very specific sound, which, you know, you will hear in hopefully not too long.
So then, like, in terms of finding a band to take this out on the road, mm-hmm. like, are there specific qualities you're looking for? Or, like, you know, are you looking at sounds that these people have made previously so that they can make the sounds you're looking for? What's kind of the decision-making going into that?
I think there are two things I learned this year. The first thing is that it's like hugely important to bring bass and drums together. So if you can find a bassist and a drummer that have chemistry already and have been playing together for a while, it makes like an enormous difference, I have found. The other thing is choosing people who make their own music that like you really love and respect, because they're going to be making, you know, compositional decisions and harmonic decisions. And so you want to be able to agree and love, you know, what their input is. So I think all of those things are part of it.
The bass and drums coming as a combo, had you had experiences with like individual bassists and drummers where they weren't clicking?
I mean, I think definitely they were clicking, but it just takes a little longer because, you know, you have to make the chemistry happen inside of the context of your band. So, you know, something that, you know, if they came together, it might be right away. It might take, you know, with new people, it might take 3 to 6 months before they really can like vibe together, in my experience.
You mentioned in your band. Now, as your band, like what kind of band leader are you? Like what's your kind of leadership style?
Oppressive autocrat. what's my leadership style? I like for things to be quite democratic, but I lead with a soft voice and a hard stick. I don't know if that's an expression or if I'm just making that up. I like to keep things casual and professional, I guess, as much as possible. I don't know if that means anything.
It hints at things. I mean, a soft voice, you know, that you're not some like autodidact who's like, you know, yelling at everyone in the band. But
yeah.
I think you have to have some sort of discipline. And I suppose that's the hard stick idea.
Totally. Definitely discipline. Definitely. You know, it's a serious project, but we have to be people that like each other and want to be friends and want to spend a lot of time together. And of course, like the people that I want to bring with me have to be people that accept that if there are things I don't like, then they change them. And that's not a big deal, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, this current tour, the Back from the Dead tour, which will bring you to Real Love Summerfest, are you pretty much playing exclusively the new stuff, or will you be playing stuff off Playing House? Like, how do you build a set right now?
I think because I'm most excited about the new stuff, obviously, we are mainly doing new stuff, and then maybe one or two of the older songs from Playing House. But I really think for me this summer, it's an opportunity to really work out that new stuff and also get people excited about it, hopefully. So that's kind of the plan.
Does the ideas or kind of a thought process behind putting together a set lend itself to putting together like the track list for a record? Like, do you think about, you know, how do these songs play together in a continuous thing as I'm on stage versus, you know, how they would play back to back to back on a stream or
yeah,
on a CD?
That's a really interesting question. I think that in some cases, it definitely feels like, for example, an order that I might have chosen on the record sometimes feels like the correct choice for the live as well. But that said, I feel like on the record, the choices are more influenced by kind of like an indoor listening narrative arc versus I think like... for a live setting, you want to organize things in terms of like how they generate like live energy and like live response. So there tends to be more of like a focus on what the energy is versus like what the sound or emotion is.
Mm. So less about the story of the song and more about kind of like what people feel as a result.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now you have a few festivals, like you're playing Hillside.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing outside at Yonge and Dundas Square, and then the Real Love is outside as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go and play some club shows, and I'm curious if like the approach to what a set is changes drastically indoors versus outdoors.
Yeah, these are great questions, things to think about. I think when you're doing an outdoor thing, let's say you're doing an afternoon outdoor thing. You might be more willing to play kind of like some of the softer songs. You know, if someone's sitting on the grass in the sun, they might want to hear something different than if they're in a club at midnight. So I think that's a consideration. And then also, I guess just like general loudness is always a consideration. I really, really like to play to the room because you don't want to hear something way too loud in a tiny room and you don't want to hear something way too quiet on like a giant outdoor stadium. So that is always a consideration as well.
Right. Now the indoor shows that are on your coming tour are supporting Mauno. And I'm curious how that
tour got linked up? Like, are you friends with the band, or like, how did you kind of link up to perform with them?
Yeah, I'm definitely friends with the band. I have known Nick from the band for probably 10 years now. I think we met in London, Ontario when I was probably 16. So yeah, they've been around, and then they all moved to Montreal in the last 2 years. So they've just become a band that I really respect and love the idea of aligning myself with. So yeah.
It's interesting that you were talking earlier about kind of the sound and kind of balancing like sort of crystalline production and sort of like warmth or like fuzziness, because that's something that I think Mauno does as well.
I do really think they do that. I think they have a really strong sensibility for what they're doing and what kind of sounds they're making. And yeah, it is like, it's at once crystal clear, and at the same time, they present it with like a very specific tone. And actually their new record, which has started to come out, is
really good.
It's amazing, first of all. And second of all, they recorded it with Chad Van Galen, who is all about that kind of like unique, fuzzy but still clear and still sensitive and still emotional kind of overall feeling. So I think that's a big part of it too.
It's a pretty solid double bill if anyone's in Minneapolis or Chicago at the end of July. Before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track, I guess off of Playing House, since it's the album that's out. And if you have a reason why you're picking that song in particular or an anecdote about it, I'd love to hear that.
Maybe I would pick If After All. It's a song that, despite its age, I still am interested in playing and sometimes even listening to. And I think that it maybe leads most directly into my upcoming album, so it feels still relevant. I think that's the one I would want to have represented at the moment.
So it kind of suggests what we might hear on stage at Real Love?
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. Best place to keep tabs on you, is it Instagram? It seems like you're posting stuff on there.
Yeah, Instagram is the most direct link to me. And then otherwise, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter even. Any of those social platforms.
So it's at Common Holly. Brigitte, thanks very much for taking some time, and looking forward to seeing you here in Winnipeg, and safe travels in the interim.
Thanks so much, Michael.
One day, let's take this one day at a time. No more assumptions, I have no reason. Let's take this one day at a time. No more oblivion, I have no reason. I won't remember if after all. Yeah.
back here on Thank God It's Free Range. That was Lost in My Dream from Drug Dealer, who are also playing Real Love Summerfest alongside Common Holly. A little more closer on the calendar is tonight. Late Kings from Mississauga are in town to play the Dog Pound at Bulldog Pizza. And stop by the station to rip through a little set. And here it is right now on 101.5 UMFM. That was Late Kings from Mississauga. They are playing the Dog Pound at Bulldog Pizza this evening. So head on over there if you catch this and like what you heard. That was My Pain, the last track, which is free on their Bandcamp page. Going to leave you with something from Black Mountain's Destroyer. Little heavy thing as we head over to After 8 Radio and stick it around here for the rest of the evening on 101.5 UMFM.
Thank you. Yeah.